have to be your biggest fan. And when things are really tough and they're really rough and nothing's working, but there's something inside of you that says, I just have to follow that. Because you don't know who you're going to be, who you're going to be, who you're going to be.
Hello and welcome to Better Days. Thank you for tuning in today, wherever you are in the world. And thanks so much for all the amazing feedback on the podcast. We are so glad that you are enjoying it. This is the last episode of the season, but we promise you there is plenty more to come. This podcast is brought to you with thanks to Simprove. Jerry and I are big fans of Simprove and take it every single morning. Made simple, Simprove is a gut health supplement with 94% of customers saying they feel a difference within 12 weeks. It's different to other digestive supplements, as its water-based solution means the billions of bacteria in each shot are alive and active. The bacteria do not trigger digestion and get to work right away, supporting and balancing your gut microbiome. Stress and processed foods can cause us to have an imbalance of bacteria in our gut, and Simprove helps us rebalance. Good health contributes to so much more than just your digestion. A healthy microbiome can also support your immune and hormone health, your mood, your skin health, and energy levels too. A 12-week course is recommended to see the full benefits, but on Mars Pharmacy, when you purchase 8 weeks, you get the final 4 weeks for free. Head over to marspharmacy.ie or click on the link in the show notes for more. Welcome back to Better Days. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And you know what, Jerry? I was listening back to the episodes we've done so far, and I feel like emotional boundaries keeps popping up. I know you speak about it in your book, but could you start today by telling us how we can set up emotional boundaries, or how do we even, you know, become aware of them?
Yeah, I think for me, it's really important. And emotional boundaries, first and foremost, are about listening to your own emotions. You are the greatest sense checker that there is as to whether something is right or wrong, or whether something feels right. So as we said on our different podcasts, and as I say in the book, emotions are neither right nor wrong. They're not good or bad. They're simply information. And when you feel an emotion, rather than getting caught up in the emotion, what you should ask is, what is that emotion telling me about this person or this situation? It's almost going back to your intuition, how I feel. If you're in the company of somebody and you feel uncertain, you feel anxious, you feel that has to be acknowledged. Something in this right now isn't right. If somebody says something to you and it doesn't feel right, if it makes you feel small, if you feel that in some way it has demeaned you, you have to listen to that. It doesn't always mean that you're right, but it means something in your deepest wisdom means this isn't right. So when it comes to emotions, the first thing about an emotion is to feel it, to honor it, and then ask, what's the message this is trying to tell me? So when somebody does something, when somebody behaves in a certain way and it makes you feel angry or frustrated or small or demeaned, you have to honor that. And you have to say, is that me overreacting to the situation? Or is that that person, whether they know it or not, and sometimes they know it, Georgie, feeling that it's okay to make me feel like that. So they feel that it's okay to speak to me like that. They feel that it's okay to treat me like that. They feel that it's okay for the relationship to exist as it exists. Because what they're saying is, it is okay for you to feel like that. And then you have to say, no, it's not. In this short, beautiful life that I have, the feelings I want to feel are joy, love. I want to feel enough, and I want to feel safe. If someone emotionally doesn't make you feel safe, if somebody's actions make you feel angry and frustrated, it's not about the other person. It's about you saying, this isn't right for me. This makes me feel in a way that I wouldn't choose to feel. And other people should not make you feel in a way that you wouldn't choose to feel yourself.
Yeah, because I think when you're saying there, we need to acknowledge that we feel a certain way. I think for so many of us, we just push those feelings away or we bury them. We don't want to even look at them. So should you say that to the person, like, I feel uncomfortable, or where do you go from there? I suppose there's many things that you could do.
Yeah, the first thing, and it kind of keeps coming back, and my own wife is listening to these podcasts and she's laughing because she's like, God, you know, so much of this is new for some people, but she just knows it's me. So when people says, oh yeah, Jerry, I'd love to meet up for coffee, and I say no, because it doesn't feel right for me. It just doesn't feel right. There is nothing in me that's saying, yes, meet that person for a coffee. And I'm like, no, thanks. Or Miriam would often say at times, because I can be a bit of a recluse, you know, maybe because I give so much of my time to people. Miriam says, like, would you not go down to the and watch the match? You know, we're coming into Six Nations season. Would you not go down to the pub and watch the match with the guys? No, I don't drink, but, and I'm like, no. Or one of the lads would text me and say, we're down at the pub, come on down, watch the match. And I'm like, no, no interest. And Miriam would say, well, at least give them an excuse or they'll just think you're being rude. I'm like, no, I'm just saying no. Because right now I'm sitting on my couch. It's nice and quiet. I have a lovely cup of tea in. My feet are up. And there's not an iota within me that wants to go down there. And I'm not going to disobey myself or dishonor myself. So that's as simple as an emotional boundary is. And if the person I text out of the pub laughs and kind of says, that's Jerry, he's mad, he's a bit of a recluse, but should we love him? If you can't express yourself fully in the way that you are, and if you can't express your emotional needs in their entirety to people, then that's not a healthy relationship. So emotional needs is firstly about you honoring you, but then it's also about honoring what's happening. So even in some of the corporate teams I work with, we have a very simple thing where we sense check, or what's called a temperature check. Every now and again in a meeting, somebody will say, can I just ask a question, please? And we'll say, yes. I'm sensing that there's anger in this meeting. I'm sensing that we're not really interested in this debate. Or I'm sensing that there's a frustration between you two guys there. This isn't the type of meeting I want to be in. And if this isn't addressed, we're not going to get anywhere. So maybe I'm wrong, but can we address that, please? Can we address the emotion in the room? Can we address the hostility in the room? Because I'm here, I'm giving my time to this. I want this meeting to be excellent. I'm bringing my best to this. But I'm sitting in an environment that's not healthy, that's not conducive, that's not what we're about. So sometimes it's about sense checking what's going on inside and honoring that. And sometimes it's about having the courage to honor what's going on here. Or sometimes in a meeting, they'll say, can I just ask a question? What's the conversation we're actually having? Because sometimes the conversation is, how do we make the company better? How do we address the problem? And then often the conversation becomes about egos. Who's right? Who's wrong? Or it becomes about the past. It becomes about blame. It becomes about something else. And now you're losing time and emotion to stuff that you can't change. And it's a great question. Can I just ask, what's this conversation actually about? What's the conversation we're actually having here? So emotional boundaries is about recognizing when something feels not right. Something feels out of balance, and having the courage to either inwardly or outwardly sense check that for clarity.
I love that, because having the courage to call it out, like just as you're speaking there, reminds me of my brother Mick. That's something that he would do, I feel like, in the middle of a conversation. He'd say, whoa, hang on a minute. What are you actually saying here? Or how are you feeling about this right now? And it's such a gift to give to the world, to have the courage. My mum always says it, just say how you feel. Just, we're all tippy-toeing around each other. Just say how you feel, which is amazing.
Yeah. And I think the way, what might prevent us is, of course, we're always afraid of upsetting people, but we have to kind of grow beyond that. But we have to be sensitive to people. So what I would say, how I do it sometimes is I say, the story that's building in my head, Georgie, is that I've said something that has annoyed you. Because for the last few moments, what I'm sensing from you is you're annoyed. Mm-hmm. Or I would say, the story that's building in my head, and it might have no basis in reality, is that you're not interested in this, or you don't see this as valuable. So it's a lovely way of taking ownership and saying the story that's building in my head is, I want you to answer, is that right or wrong? Or you might say, the emotion that I'm feeling right now, my sense of this is that we've now moved off topic. My sense of this is that there's frustration between us. And I've learned that from the great leaders that I've worked with that regularly would say, Jerry, I'm just going to stop us there now. My sense right now is that you're angry. My sense right now is that you don't trust me. And before we go on, before we say anything else, this is what we need to address. That is the power of emotional maturity, emotional regulation, emotional intelligence. The ability to know that the emotion I'm feeling right now is either enabling the situation or disabling it. And before we continue on, can we stop it? Can we correct it? Can we address it?
I'm excited to get into today's dilemma because I feel like, and I know I say this every time, but a lot of people will be able to relate. So, hi, Georgie and Jerry, loving the podcast, and I hope you can help me with a few issues I'm having. First of all, I am juggling a lot. I have two teenagers and a toddler, a big gap I know, but a much longed for third child. I am currently in perimenopause and everything I have read about this is so negative and it scares me. I can't stop thinking about what is going to happen to my body. I have a husband who is easily distracted. He helps to a certain extent, but I feel like I carry everything. I wear many hats. I want to be more connected to my husband. I want us to find a way to come back together. But I feel at times he doesn't want to help me because he's busy. We never talk. I don't know what goes on in his head sometimes. I would love some real honest advice. And I guess this does prove that women juggle so many balls sometimes.
There's so much in this, Georgie. So I'm going to try and go through it in different pieces, okay? Some of it then might everybody will agree with and some mightn't. But I'm going to give you my absolute honest answer here. So firstly, there's a lot of change happening in this life. And not just, you know, her perimenopause, two teenage children. And change is happening fast. And sometimes life, my sister says, life is like a roller coaster. And sometimes you can't control the speed of the highs and lows. But what you have to try to do is just make sure that you're buckled in and people in are safe. And just like on a roller coaster, remember it will end. So no matter what you're going through. So my first, I would extend compassion to this lady. You know, we know within her there's chemical, biological, hormonal changes, psychological and emotional. She's approaching a stage of her life where it's about bereavement and letting go. So that alone requires work, chemical, hormonal, psychological and emotional. To be moving into that phase of your life, you need to mind yourself. You need to open up. You need to chat. You need to think about it. You need to release. There's a grieving model going on here. So that's the first part. I have compassion towards her. And I think she needs to take the time and space to guide herself through this and let go what she needs to let go of and to deal with that. So firstly, be kind. Second, challenge the stories you're telling yourself. Become an expert. Become an expert on perimenopause. Find out, where can I support? Where could I see this differently? What if this was the beginning of the breakthrough? And I said to you before, Georgie, sometimes we need a breakdown to have a breakthrough. Right now, your life, depending on your story, depending on what's happening, this is either the beginning of the end or it's simply the end of the beginning. This is where your life begins to change. This is where you begin to take control. This is where you begin to accept everything that is in your life, but not be defined by it. Listen to the powerful stories that are out there. Listen to the powerful science. Listen to the powerful psychologists. This might be the moment that sets you free.
So tell me about drifting apart in a marriage. Does it happen to everyone or how can you prevent it?
I can't say it happens to everybody because I haven't been in everybody's marriage. I don't know that. I can talk about my lived experience in working with people who are married and my own personal experience. firstly, every human being is changing all the time. So I say that all the time. We're changing from a cellular level. We're changing from a biological level. So your body is renewing itself all the time. But we're also changing emotionally and psychologically. So you have two people who've committed to this lifelong thing. But the person you marry, so if you get married at 25 or 27 or 37, in 5 years' time or even 2 years' time, that person you married is gone. And the person that married that person is gone. So now you have two new people looking at each other. So when I met Miriam, she was a pharmacist with no children. Now she is a mother of two and a business lady. And she's changed incredibly since I've met her. Since having children, she's changed beyond anything I could imagine. And so have I. I think if people don't consciously acknowledge the change and acknowledge that we need to change and grow together and we need to regularly speak. So I've clients, and one client in particular, one of the things they do a couple of times a year is to sit down and they look at their marriage. Not about their kids, not about anything else. And one of the questions he asks is, when you fell in love with me, what did you fall in love with? And do you still see it? And the second is, when you married me, what type of husband did you hope I would be? And am I that man? I think unless we have these regular conversations, the person that you married is over. Even if you only got married from 6 months ago, they're not there anymore. Everything is changing. So we have to change together. We have to grow together. We have to have these open, honest, regular conversations. Your life cannot be all about your kids, your work, your house, the bills. It has to be our marriage. How are we doing right now? How many moments of absolute love do we share? How many moments of absolute compassion? Do you see me? Do you love me? What in me annoys you? What in me frustrates you? How have I changed? And what has that change meant for you? But that is the basis of every deep human relationship. It is open. It is honest. It is challenging. And it is constantly acknowledging that everybody in that relationship is changing dramatically all the time. And that change. So my marriage with Miriam now is totally different to the marriage we had in the beginning. We're different people. We want different things. We look at each other different. We speak different. It's a different marriage, and it'll probably be different in another year. But somebody has to be consciously aware that that change is happening. And as that change happens, you either grow together or you grow apart.
It's exactly like sitting at the boardroom table and calling it out.
It's exactly the same way.
We could go years thinking something and not having the courage to say it to our partner. I think one of the biggest things for me in my marriage with Jamie was to stop assuming things about him. That set me free, because I was looking at Jamie assuming, because we spend all of our time together, we do everything together, we work together. I was thinking for him without asking him what he's actually thinking.
Of course. And you know what? It goes back to the last piece of the scenario we had for today. Women juggle a lot of balls. Now, I'm going to annoy a lot of people by saying this. Yes, women juggle a lot of balls. I will absolutely acknowledge that. But does that mean men don't? Because I'm going to give you my experience. I wake up in the morning. I go through my morning routines. I make sure that I have breakfast with my children every morning, that I'm down on the floor playing with them. Once they go to school, I go to work. Once work is over, I'm home. I have made strategic decisions about the hours that I work so that I can collect my kids from school. I could be making far more money. I could be building a bigger business. I'm not, because I want to be with my kids. I'm with my children playing every day from 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock. I sleep with my little boy every night. And in the middle of all that, I cook dinners, I clean houses, I do the laundry. I know everything there is to know about our kids. I play an active role in our lives. To say, and I am a man, because sometimes women have a story that men are kind of one-dimensional Neanderthal people. That is not the new man. And people that I surround myself with, men that I surround myself, are kind, loving people who are committed to playing an active role in every aspect of their marriage and their life. It's not a man or woman thing. That story has to go. That's just women have all the balls juggling and men kind of sits around drinking beer, watching television. Most men I know, when they're not working, they're with their children. Most men I know are happy to do, pay the bills and happy to do laundry and happy. That's life. That's what we do. Now, maybe the problem is you've fallen in contact with a person that happens to be a man, but they're lazy and they're one-dimensional. That has nothing to do with being a man. That has no resonance in my experience of a masculine. And I would say, a bit like Jamie, people who know me, I am a very masculine, whatever that means to the world, I'm a man's man. But this idea that men don't talk and men sit around drinking beer, I've never drank beer in my life. That men don't actively play a role, that men don't juggle as many balls. I'm not tolerating that story anymore. I totally acknowledge that women juggle a lot of balls. Some men don't, but maybe they're just lazy. And some women don't, and maybe they're lazy.
A big thanks to Simpru for supporting Better Days, and will say my days are always better when I start with my shot of mango and passion fruit Simpru. In fact, over 100,000 people start their day with a two, and it has over 5,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot. One of their customers said, "Since I started taking Simpru, my IBS has improved dramatically. Headaches, a thing of the past. I cannot praise this product enough. Thank you, Simpru." While another said, "I am Simprove's biggest fan. On day 11, I started to notice a change. I wake up in the mornings feeling rested. My reflux has improved hugely and my brain fog has disappeared. It has definitely worked for me and I'm only on week 5. So happy I came across it and gave it a try. It's worth every penny and more."
I don't know if you know the answer to this, Jerry, but like, how do men feel seen or appreciated?
I think it's the old stories. I think there's a, you know, my dad went out to work every day because he had to. So he wasn't around to rear the kids. He wasn't around to bring us to matches. He never read us bedtime stories. But did that mean he was lazy? He wasn't off playing golf and sitting in the bar. My parents made a decision that my mum would stay at home and raise our children. And my dad would be there. And that was their decision. My dad didn't have a choice. So if I'm, how could I be angry at my dad? That was the role my dad took on. Now, that role is changing. And whether it's changed or not, there are still some men who are the sole breadwinner. There are women who are the sole breadwinner. Every marriage has to sit down and talk about roles. What are the roles you are playing? What are the weight you are carrying? I think a lot of men, in some cases, we're still expected to be the breadwinner and the parent and the cook and if I was being really honest, most men I know are afraid to say it, but what they feel like saying, Jesus, when is enough? We can't do everything. But in the modern world, we're expected to play the role of our father and be the breadwinner, and we're expected to be the full-time parent as well. And a lot of men I know, that's the secret struggle that we have. That's the frustration that we have.
Okay.
And the minute you walk in the door, it's like, here, well, you've been at work all day. You take the kids. And what we'd love to say is, yes, I've been at work all day. And I carry pressure and stress at work. And what I'd really love now is an hour off. So I just think it can't be a man thing and a woman thing. It is about two people coming together to say, right, these are the physical, the financial, the emotional, the psychological needs that we have in our house. Now, how do we make sure that they're distributed evenly? Say, like a guy comes home from work, puts his feet up, drinking beer all evening. Well, I have no time for that guy either. Mm-hmm. But it can't be a guy thing versus a female thing. That's just more division. That's more frustration. We need to see each other. And even Miriam regularly asks, you know, on a day, we might have a day off together. And she'd say, you know, what are your needs today? What do you need to do today? Because maybe she's been home with the kids all week and she wants to get out and do something. And I'm exhausted. I would just love for an hour to put the television on and watch a movie. So it's back to open, clear communication where both parties have psychological and emotional safety to express themselves, to state their needs and own their needs. And we can't get caught up in his or her or women and men. And that's not helpful to anybody. That's dismissive, actually, of what I believe the modern man is trying to achieve. And when I see people like myself and like Jamie and most men I know, we're pretty damn incredible, just like women are incredible. And I think we need to acknowledge the magnificence of each other.
So just to recap, if we were to sit down, if we want more connection in our marriage, if we were to sit down with our partner this week and ask those questions, can you give us three or four questions that we might be able to ask each other?
The first question is, when you first fell in love with me, what was it you fell in love with? Do you still see those things and do I still display those things?
Okay.
The second question would be, are we having enough fun together? Do we laugh enough? Third question is, how have we both changed over the last period that hasn't been acknowledged? Or finally, where in my marriage do I feel seen and recognized? And where in my marriage do I feel not seen and not recognized? Now, the challenge here, and I get annoyed at myriad times where, and we do it to each other, if someone says, I don't feel seen by you, don't jump in and say, what do you mean you don't feel seen by me? Sure, didn't I buy you that card for your birthday? That's what happens at times. Emotional responsibility is this person is going to open up with vulnerability and they're going to dare to tell you their experience. They don't need you to come in and instantly try to tell them they're wrong. What do you mean? Actually, that's not right. Or someone says, you don't do anything around the house. What do you mean? Didn't I do this? The question, when someone makes a statement that doesn't make sense, the only statement you say is, tell me more. What does that mean? How do you feel when I say that to you? Because very often we only see things through our own perspective. Very often when someone says something that we find emotionally hard to receive, we fight back. So if a couple is going to start asking themselves real meaningful questions, it has to be heard in a real meaningful way, where you're listening to understand and you are not listening to respond.
Listening to understand, not listening to respond.
Yeah.
That's huge. Thank you so much, Jerry.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And thank you so much to that lady for having the courage to write in. And thank you, Jerry, for your compassion in dealing with her dilemma today. We're very grateful for your insight. So that's it from, will we say series one of Better Days? I'm sure we will be back, Jerry. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I've loved spending time with you. You're one of my great friends. I learned so much from you. Thank you so much. And yeah, I think we'll definitely come back for another season.
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And if we enjoy it and people enjoy what we do together, yeah, there's no reason why we wouldn't do it. But it's been a joy and it's been great for me. Sometimes I get lost in the complexity and the science of all this because I love it. What you have done and what this podcast series has done for me is how do you make that real, Jerry, and applicable? It's easy to talk about the quantum field and all of this hypothetical stuff, and I love that. But, you know, and I think if we did a second series, I think we could be better because you're helping me to get to the practicality of all this. And that's where I think my own evolution into the future. I've gone into the highfalutin, that I've gone into the theory, and now I need to come back. And this podcast series has been a really important step in my own development. And okay, Jerry, you have all of this stuff, but like, make it simple, make it practical. So I would love a chance. And I know that if we get a chance to do another, it'll be even better because it's going to enable me to become better. So thank you, Georgie, for all that you do. And all the space you've always given me to be myself, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it from start to finish.
Oh, thanks, Jerry. And I absolutely adore you. And I feel like you wear your heart on your sleeve. Everything that you speak about, you have lived. And that is so real for people. So thank you so much for sharing so much, so openly and honestly. And thank you to you for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed this season, and we will see you very soon. So that's it. That's the end of season one of Better Days. A huge thank you to every single person who wrote into the show, who shared so bravely. I hope you took something from it. And you, the listener, thank you so much for tuning in again and again and sharing your feedback. And to Jerry, a huge thank you for just being so open and honest and showing us the way. We'll see you next time.
Have to be your biggest fan. And when things are really tough and they're really rough and nothing's working, but there's something inside of you that says, I just have to follow that, because you don't know who you're